Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
The point is, ladies and gentlemen, that greed, for lack of a better word, is good. You might remember those are the words of Gordon Gekko in the 1987 film Wall Street, portrayed very well, I would say, by Michael Douglas. Greed is good, although the Bible would say greed is bad. What are we to think of greed, markets, capitalism, and money? And Pope Francis, who's made alleged to have made interesting comments about this last week, told to us by hearsay, unfortunately. This is the Council of Trent. I am your host, Catholic apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. And today I want to talk to you about money, markets, capitalism. Ironically enough, in my own bioethics program that I'm working on right now, I'm taking a class on healthcare organization and the influence of organizations and the market. And we were actually just rereading Centissimus Annos, the encyclical Pope St. John Paul II released shortly after the fall of the Soviet Union and in commemoration of a previous encyclical that excoriated and critiqued socialism that had put out by his predecessor in the 19th century, Pope Leo XIII. That was, of course, Rerum Novarum. Now to get to the story that I was reading about. Newsweek magazine published this on November 2nd. It says, Pope Francis thinks capitalism is a sin, documentary filmmaker Michael Moore said while speaking with television host Seth Meyers on Thursday. And Moore goes on to say, I went to the weekly audience in the Vatican, and then he asked me, the Pope, to speak to me privately. It was an amazing moment, and I asked him if I could ask him a question. And he said yes, Moore said, recounting his visit with the Pope last month. And I said, do you believe, this is Michael Moore talking to Pope Francis, allegedly, do you believe that an economic system that benefits the few, the wealthy at the expense of the many, is a sin? And he said to me, si, in Italian. Well, so the article goes on that, you know, Michael Moore, well, let me just, I'll read the rest, actually. And I said, so you believe capitalism, the kind of capitalism we have now, is a sin? He goes, yes, it is. He said, the poor must always come first. Now, ladies and gentlemen, that's what we call a loaded question. That's a fallacy where you phrase the question in such a way that it's impossible for you to answer it. It's kind of like asking somebody, oh, so when's the last time you cheated on your spouse or cheated on your taxes? Have you stopped hitting your wife yet? Those are the classic loaded questions. Now, the question is aimed in a certain direction. It's impossible for you to answer it without tacitly approving of one of the assumptions built into the question. And that's what we have here with Moore, who asks Pope Francis, not what do you think about capitalism? Or do you think capitalism is a sin? But defining capitalism as an economic system that benefits the few, the wealthy, at the expense of the many. So if you put it that way, that's a very, I'd say, unfair description of capitalism. Of course, there's times in the markets where you can have situations where workers can be exploited. As this program goes on, I want to let you know that I try really hard to have nuanced views of these issues. I do have my own personal views. I have my I have my politics, of course. I've tried to keep that out of the podcast as much as I can because I want this podcast to be about an explanation and defense of the teaching of the church. And so, you know, it's kind of like when St. Paul writes in his letter to the Corinthians, he makes a distinction in Corinthians, like in 1 Corinthians 7, between what he says. He talks about, you know, this is what I say, not the Lord, but I, as in Paul is giving his advice to people. And then other times Paul says, not I, but the Lord says this, as something that is coming straight from an apostolic tradition he received from the other apostles, something that can be traced all the way back to Jesus himself. That's just the tradition that Paul received about the Last Supper and what happened when Jesus instituted the Eucharist. So it's kind of like on the podcast, I'm going to have opinions and I'm okay to share them because you might be interested in them. I'm not saying they're infallible. They could be incorrect, but I have my certain views on matters. And then there's other views with what the church teaches. And economics is one of those issues where it can get a little gray and fuzzy. I mean, we have some issues where it's cut and dry. Either it's morally wrong to end a child's life through abortion or it's not. Either it's wrong to euthanize a disabled person by purposely overdosing them with morphine to kill them, or it's not. Those would be non-negotiable issues. If you are Catholic, you cannot be in favor of directly killing innocent people. You just can't. But when it comes to economic systems, economics is complex. How you can have a just and flourishing society, there are complex factors in there, and that can lead to reasonable disagreement among Catholics about certain aspects of economic theories. And so what the Catechism talks about, what the Church has always taught, is that either extreme is wrong, either whether you have socialism, communism, where government exists in a way that completely keeps man from having a right to private property, the right to be able to run businesses and flourish in this way. So the Church has, ever since Rerum Novarum, has criticized this kind of socialist or communist thinking. But then on the other hand would be the errors that can come from unfettered capitalism, where a person thinks that the pursuit of money, you know, the pursuit of profit is really the only thing that matters, and nothing else really matters in the long term. Back in 1970, Milton Friedman, so if you're a big capitalist, if you are a big promoter of capitalism, you'll certainly know Milton Friedman. And in 1970, he wrote an article about the social responsibility of an organization. And he made this very blunt thesis. He said, a corporation, a business, has only one responsibility, and that is to make profits for its shareholders. That is it. A company does not have a responsibility to make the world a better place, to reduce pollution, to make sure its workers are treated in any kind of dignified way. The company just has simply, now a CEO could use his own salary, his personal salary, to accomplish those ends. But Friedman denied that a company had any social responsibility whatsoever. All it's supposed to do is stay within the rules of the game, as he said, so don't commit fraud, and make profits. And so that's problematic because some people will say, you know, Pope Francis, and I want to talk about this a little bit more later, has come out with some very critical responses to markets, to capitalism, to excesses in the market economy that he believes leads to inequality, to offenses against human dignity. And however, when you that kind of rhetoric, some people say, "Oh, he's, you know, he's just a socialist or he's a Marxist." That's going a bit too far because you can find those same warnings in Centissimus Annus, Pope St. John Paul II's letter, where he talks in there about how profit is one indicator of the health of a company. But Pope St. John Paul II made it very clear it is not the only indicator. It's not the only indicator. And so that there are other things that a company has to take into account. And so I believe that human beings do have responsibilities to one another, and we do have these responsibilities even within a market system. So this story that comes out, I mean, it's been getting a little bit of play going around that Pope Francis condemns capitalism, and Moore goes on to say that Pope Francis begged him to go back and keep making movies. And look, this is hearsay testimony. We weren't there to hear exactly what the Pope said to Michael Moore. And I'm sure, though, if you put it this way, the way the Pope did, or sorry, the way Michael Moore did, saying, do you support an economic system that, you know, harms most people, the poor, in order to benefit the wealthy? Well, anybody's going to say, no, I don't support that, but that's an uncharitable representation of capitalism. If you look at Centissimus Annus by Pope St. John Paul II, one section that I think speaks to this question very well about whether capitalism is moral or not moral can be found in paragraphs 42 and 43. I want to read them at length because they're just that good. So this is what Pope St. John Paul II said. And remember, he's writing this. He's writing this shortly after the fall of the Iron Curtain. So shortly after the demise of probably the largest communist state ever known in the world, at least at that time. And so the question is, now that the Soviet Union has fell, the Iron Curtain has fallen, is capitalism the only other alternative? Is capitalism a good thing? Is it a bad thing? This is what the Pope says in Centissimus Annus. Returning now to the initial question, can it perhaps be said that after the failure of communism, capitalism is the victorious social system, and that capitalism should be the goal of the countries now making efforts to rebuild their economy and society? Is this the model which ought to be proposed to the countries of the Third World, which are searching for the path to true economic and civil progress? The answer is obviously complex. If by capitalism is meant an economic system which recognizes the fundamental and positive role of business, the market, private property, and the resulting responsibility for the means of production, as well as free human creativity in the economic sector, then the answer is certainly in the affirmative, even though it would perhaps be more appropriate to speak of a business economy, market economy, or simply free economy. But if by capitalism is meant a system in which freedom in the economic sector is not circumscribed within a strong juridical framework, which places it at the service of human freedom in its totality, and which sees it as a particular aspect of that freedom, the core of which is ethical and religious, then the reply is certainly negative. So Pope St. John Paul II makes it clear. If by capitalism you mean the freedom to form associations and businesses to work together to contribute to human flourishing, then yeah, capitalism is the answer. But if you mean an economic system that's not restrained by any ethical or legal framework, that is only guided by what the famous capitalist Adam Smith called the invisible hand of the market, without these ethical and religious frameworks to help guide it, then the answer, he says, is put in the negative. So I have a theory, though, about you can find different places where Pope Francis has been critical of capitalism. However, I was reading an interview. No, it wasn't an interview. It was something that Pope Francis wrote that Pope Emeritus Benedict XVI quoted from in a book. And he was quoting Pope Francis saying that the totalitarian nature of communism and Marxism must be rejected. So I'm sorry, Pope Francis, when I look at the research here, he's not a communist. He is not a Marxist. He is not embraced the totalitarian takeover of private industry by the state. But he is concerned about the excesses of capitalism leading to income inequality and exploitation of the poor. And I have a theory about why that is, why this Pope in particular has been very critical of capitalism. If you remember that Pope Francis, of course, comes from Argentina in the late 1990s, He was the Archbishop of Buenos Aires. I went to Buenos Aires many years ago. It's a wonderful, vibrant city where you can get an expensive, great steak dinner at 11 o'clock at night and stay up to all hours. I loved being in Argentina and being in Buenos Aires. But what he's concerned about, I think, is that in the 90s, from 1998 to 2002, Argentina experienced a very, very difficult economic depression. It was essentially the Great Depression of Argentina from 1998 to 2002. And they had been having economic problems in the 70s and 80s, really as a result of the transfer of power between military dictatorships going over to democracy and back again as the country was trying to grow and stabilize itself. And during the 90s, Argentina was actually doing well. Its GDP, or gross domestic product, was increasing. So they had done something where they had linked the Argentinian peso with the American dollar to provide stability. And so things seemed to be going well through the 90s until 1998 to 2002, there was a complete economic collapse in the Argentinian markets. You had riots, you had runs on the banks, you had limits where people couldn't take out more than $1,000 worth of pesos at a time from the banks. It was just awful. And so it led to all of the economic and social maladies that a depression can bring with it. And Pope Francis was the Archbishop of Buenos Aires during this time. So he saw all this firsthand. And this is similar to when in the United States we dealt with a Great Recession back in 2008. I remember I was getting ready for a fundraising campaign for the pro-life mission group that I worked for. I had all my little front fundraising letters all laid out. And then, George Bush, President Bush, gets on the news, says, well, we're in a heap of trouble, essentially. And we had to ride that out. And surveys have shown since the Great Recession in the United States, young people are more apt to want to embrace socialism because they believe that capitalism and free markets don't protect people, that they lead to these kind of recessions, depressions, wealth inequality. And so they blame that on markets and think that if the economy were planned, that would just be a lot better. If people were planning it so these things wouldn't happen, things would be fine, and we would make sure people are not left without basic resources they need. We can redistribute wealth so it's more fair and the problems are solved. But that's just not the case. When you look at things like the Great Recession, when you look at the Argentinian Great Depression in the late 90s, the fault does not lie in the principle of a free market or a market economy. A lot of times, young people, what they call capitalism and they blame for social ills, are really things like crony capitalism. That is when government meddles in the market to create unfair relationships between businesses to favor some businesses over others, because government, you know, government can spend money however it wants because it can always just, print money, borrow money, or tax people to get more money. And crony capitalism, businesses that normally would not succeed, normally would fade out of the market, are unfairly supported by government. And then those businesses support those politicians to keep them in power. And it creates an artificial framework within the market that can't succeed. So there was an article on Policy Perspectives in 2017 that talked about the Argentinian Great Depression. And this is what it said were the lessons that could be learned. First lesson to be learned is keeping the debt levels in check. The Argentinian GDP growth masked the high levels of increased borrowing that could not be tampered with in an economic downturn. The lack of labor reforms, cronyism, pensions, the idea you have public sector unions who promise extravagant pensions for their employees. They take the money, they don't spend it on the pensions themselves, and then they have these huge bills they can't pay. It was the same thing in Argentina. Argentina was not relying on its own internal economy. It was relying on cheap foreign credit and borrowing and borrowing and borrowing from foreign creditors until it couldn't be sustained anymore. So the collapse here is not because of the free market of private individuals working together. It's through the inanity of government. So government is one that leads both at the Great Recession here in the United States and in Argentina. So look, a lot of times these bad government policies lead to these economic downturns. And then my question is, so if it happens at the small scale here, do you want government planning the entire economy? Is that what you want? So when people talk about, when you talk to people and you hear people say, Catholics should be in favor of socialism, you can point them to Rerum Novarum, Centissimus Annus, these encyclicals that say, no, socialism, as it's classically defined as government controlling the private means of production, a centrally planned economy, is incompatible with Catholic teaching. The Catholic Church fought against the Soviet Union and its totalitarian control of the market for decades. And this Catholic Church was actually instrumental in the fall of the Soviet Union. So if you define it that way, no. Now, if you define socialism, now some people define it as democratic socialism. They'll say, well, socialism works. Ask them this question. Where has socialism worked? Did it work in the Soviet Union? No. Does it work in Venezuela? Venezuela is an example of socialism. Decades ago, Chavez made the country rich off of its oil exports, and then the government took over private businesses. They just would take private businesses and say, nope, you don't own it anymore. We do. And now what has happened when Venezuela has tried to centrally plan their own economy? They have widespread shortages. That you need a wheelbarrow full of money to get toilet paper, if you can even find it. There's something now called the Venezuelan diet that over the last year, Venezuelans, this is a report from Reuters, Venezuela's reported losing on average 24 pounds in body weight last year, and almost 90% now live in poverty, according to a new university study on the impact of a devastating economic crisis and food shortages. So this is something that really means a lot to me, that, you know, people will accuse me as a pro-life advocate. You only care about life before birth. You know, you don't care about life after birth. What about the poor? I firmly believe in helping the poor. The church firmly believes in helping the poor. But how we do that, it can lead to, we can have reasonable disagreement, but the church has stood firm for 150 years that the socialist communist solution is not the best one. And if you believe in helping the poor, here's an excerpt from the Chicago Tribune writing a response to Pope Francis about what he had said about capitalism. They said, look, there are elements of the free market economies that you can critique. Absolutely. They're not perfect. But I would say they're the best we have to lift people out of poverty. Here's what the Tribune said. The United Nations found in 2015 that the number of people living in extreme poverty had plunged by more than half, from 1.9 billion to 836 million since 1990. the era in which the Iron Curtain fell, capitalism invaded Eastern Europe, and China embraced free market principles. So that is just what I can't understand. That I understand it this way, that yeah, if human beings were better than the natures we have, then things would be a lot better. When Gordon Gekko says greed is good, and I remember I was writing about capitalism. I posted a video about it on my Facebook, and someone said, oh, it was John Stossel. John Stossel's a libertarian correspondent. He was with ABC, then later he's with Fox News. Now he's more independent. And he's talking about how greed is good. And they said, how can you talk about, you know, John Stossel? He says greed is good. This is capitalist propaganda. Look, as I said, capitalism and markets are not perfect, but they do take advantage of something. I personally believe free market economies and capitalism are the most effective way to lift people out of poverty, given our broken human nature. Okay? So given our human nature that tends towards selfishness, that tends towards only doing things in our interest, that is just our sinful, broken human nature. The genius of capitalism and free market is that it harnesses our selfish natures towards good, to reward those who work hard and can offer goods and services to other people, so that each of us working together, trying to facilitate our own interest, overall, everyone else's interests go up as well. That if I desire something and someone can freely create a business to serve that need of mine, then we all prosper and grow together. But it's not perfect, because it can lead to situations where there are minorities who are overlooked, or there are people who don't contribute to the free market system. I know people who, you know, try to create businesses to serve children who have autism or have severe learning disabilities. And it's hard because there might only be a handful, not very many kids, who have these particular disabilities. And so in the market, there may not be a high enough demand to fund a lot of people to help teach these children. If you have a small part of the economy that requires something, if you don't have enough demand, you may not generate enough of a response to meet that demand. Whereas I would say, no, we should, with the resources we have, donate them, give them, and that's where charity comes in, to meet those needs where the market may not necessarily meet them. So as I said, capitalism is the best system we have to lift people out of poverty, given our broken human natures. Socialism is not, because it does not respect a fundamental element of the human identity and our own basic human rights. This is something else from Centissimus Annus, Pope St. John Paul II, I think is worth sharing. He says, the fundamental error of socialism is anthropological in nature. Socialism considers the individual person simply as an element, a molecule within the social organism, so that the good of the individual is completely subordinated to the functioning of the socioeconomic mechanism. Socialism likewise maintains that the good of the individual can be realized without reference to his free choice, to the unique and exclusive responsibility which he exercises in the face of good or evil. Man is thus reduced to a series of social relationships, and the concept of the person as the autonomous subject of moral decision disappears, the very subject whose decisions build the social order. It's no surprise that when you look at communist societies, ask people where has communism worked. Look in places like China, the Soviet Union, Venezuela. You look at these places, it's not when communism is implemented, totalitarian social regimes, totalitarian political systems are not far behind, because you have to, if it's centrally planned, you end up having to control people, and you have to use force, whatever that means, to ensure that people play the game how you want them to play it. Now, some people will retort and say, well, what about Scandinavia? What about, you know, Denmark or Norway? You know, these are socialist countries where there's, you know, free childcare, free healthcare. Why can't we have something like that? Here's the problem with that. Those countries, Scandinavian countries, they are not socialist. They actually have very free markets. They're smaller countries. I think Sweden has maybe about 10 million people. Venezuela has 30 million people. So in smaller countries, it can be easier to manage this. But for decades, they had market economies that developed a lot of wealth through free trade. And then from that, they were able to become economic successes. This is an article at Forbes.com. This is how it puts it. It says, those in the Nordic countries, those productive economies generating good incomes for their workers allowed the governments to raise the tax revenue needed to pay for social benefits. In some of these countries, even the poor pay like 60% in taxes. So if you want gigantic safety net and social services, somebody has to pay for it. If somebody doesn't pay for it, then you will pay for it later with inflation and economic collapse if you think you can just borrow or print money. It was not the government benefits, the article goes on to say, that created wealth, but wealth that allowed the luxury of such generous government programs. The article goes on to say that in the Nordic countries, there's actually no minimum wage laws. I mean, they have very strong unions who basically create minimum wages for most people, but they're not extravagantly high. And also in the Nordic countries, they have school choice. They have school vouchers where you get money from the state and you choose where your money goes. So these places are not classically socialist by any means. So that is something I think that we should keep in mind. And this issue is going to come up more and more, especially with my generation that believes that socialism, and they're hearing it from politicians now, is a panacea. It will solve all of our problems. Look, at the end of the day, whatever your problems may be, and usually money is one problem, but as Jesus said, you can't serve both God and mammon. Money is something that's an instrumental good. It's good for acquiring temporal goods here, you know, and also some spiritual goods. We use money to help the poor, for example. But when money gets involved, greed is always not far behind. Greed might be good for a market system overall to lift people generally out of poverty, but it's bad for me and you. It's bad for our souls. 1 Timothy 6:10 puts it well, "For the love of money is the root of all evil." So the challenge as Christians and Catholics in a global economy is to walk the tightrope between those two sins, between the sin of greed and thinking that if I just get enough money, just get enough toys, if I get enough money, I'll be fine, and oh wow, life will even be even better if I can get this or I can get that or I can get more. That is ultimately not going to make us happy. I remember the parable that Jesus told about the farmer. He had so much wheat and so much grain. He thought, wow, I have so much stuff. I need to build a second barn for all of this stuff. And God says, you foolish man, tonight your life will be demanded of you. And what good will all of your wheat and your goods be to you then? Now, there's nothing wrong with being a rich person who follows the Lord. Job was a wealthy individual. You know, he had flocks and lambs. Abraham was the same. King David was a wealthy king. Joseph of Arimathea was wealthy enough to be able to secure a tomb for our Lord, instead of just a shallow common grave or just a very small grave box, you know, for a bone box, something like that. Joseph of Arimathea was a wealthy disciple to serve our Lord. There's nothing wrong with wealth in and of itself. There's just so much temptation involved. But on the other hand, walking the tightrope, there's the temptation towards unfettered capitalism and the love of money and socialism that denigrates the human person and treats the human person merely as one cog in a machine to serve the state, and then to treat that person however they want for the greater good of society, which violates the principle that human beings have intrinsic dignity. So we have a right to life, a right to liberty, a right to pursue and have private property, to develop business, to share goods and services to the benefit of others. So if you want some homework tonight, I still think Centesimus Annos is a wonderful encyclical. Read it if you wonder about what the church teaches on this particular issue, and then be prepared to hear other people, as you know, this is going to come up more and more, that people say, oh, you know, we should just support socialism. I'll leave you with one last illustration from history to show why socialism doesn't work. You may not have known this, but when the Pilgrims came to the United States, they actually practiced socialist principles. They all farmed, for example, collectively, so everybody got their own stake, their own plot to be able to farm land, and we all tended it, and you could take from the communal farmland whatever you needed for your family. And do you know what happened? Well, the farmland, it was stripped bare, and people risked starvation. The reason was that people would just take from the communal plot, but then not do the same amount of work to keep it up because it wasn't their own. They didn't care about it. You know, when you drive a rental car, have you ever heard, don't be gentle, it's a rental? When it's not yours, you don't take care of it as much. You just use it for your own purposes, and then you leave it off for the next person to deal with the problems that lie ahead. And so the pilgrims were near starvation. They caused something happened that economists now call the tragedy of the commons. So they almost starved to death because of this communal farming. So William Bradford, the first governor of the colony, to his solution, he said, look, we found that system bred much confusion and discontent and retarded much employment. For the young men that were most able and fit for labor and service and did repine that they should spend their time and strength to work for other men's wives and children without any recompense. He's saying, why should I do all this work for other people when you're not going to work? No one works. No one takes care of the farm. It doesn't work. So, he said, after every family was assigned its own parcel of land to farm, Governor Bradford says, this had very good success, for it made all hands very industrious. So as much more corn was planted than otherwise would have been. So, the lesson to be learned, put in an honest day's work. And when you have a surplus, though, so at our basic human sinful level, capitalism can raise people out of poverty. But we also have to allow the Holy Spirit to move in our hearts to use the funds that we've been given, that God has blessed us with, to be able to bless others in charitable ways, to go beyond what capitalism can do. Just because it's the best system doesn't mean it's complete, doesn't mean that we don't have a place to be able to use what God has blessed us with, including our money, to be able to bless others, our other brothers and sisters in Christ and other brothers and sisters who are created in the image and likeness of God. I hope that was helpful for you all. And I hope that if you enjoy this podcast as part of the free contribution to the market, that you will stop by the Council of Trent podcast and at TrentHornPodcast.com. Consider making a donation freely of your own accord as this market economy allows so that we can continue to reach more and more people. You guys are the best. Stop by TrentHornPodcast.com. And I hope you have a blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.